compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Isn't that a daisy?
Hey, we are back. You should have warned me about that, Cyrus. I could have paused for a moment. Welcome back. This is the Patrick Madrid Show. The number is 888-914-9149. I just want to remind you of what we discussed in the first hour of the program today. Maybe you didn't hear it if you're just tuning in. Relevant Radio has joined forces with EWTN and the Napa Institute in promoting a joint rosary for life. This would be a rosary that we're asking everybody all around the country to pray for an end to legal abortion in the United States. This was just announced this morning with the Supreme Court of the United States taking up the Dobbs case in December. That could lead to overturning Roe versus Wade. The justices will need the grace and wisdom and courage necessary to confront these issues honestly. So the three organizations are encouraging everybody to pray the rosary. Our Lady says pray the rosary. When she appears in Fatima, she says pray the rosary. It seems that wherever she appears, she says pray the rosary. So this is to take that to heart. And the intention is to mobilize millions of Americans in the coming weeks to pray the rosary for a legal, the end rather, to legal abortion. Would that not be a momentous day to live to see Roe versus Wade overturned? I hope and pray that I live to see that day. But in any case, you could be part of that if you join us in praying the rosary. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. I think we have Cindy back. Her phone dropped apparently, and she's back. So welcome back, Cindy.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call again. I just wanted to agree with you on that people get way too partisan about the immigration issue. And we haven't had immigration reform since 1986. So there is no administration which has really fixed the system. We had a lot of different administrations since then. So I just wanted to agree with you. And I hope we can have more comments about that without people getting angry or partisan about it, because, you know, it's an important issue that I'd like to hear more about. Anyway, I had another question on a totally different topic. I'm a catechist for teen confirmation, and we just had our first class, and I have a smaller group this year. We had an in-person class. Last year it was totally on Zoom. And I have a girl who, I only had one class, but since it's only six kids, I was able to get to know the kids a little bit, even in the first class. And one of the girls, she seemed a little bit tense and asked me, then I asked them, I use a Matthew Kelly video and workbook, and I asked them who they think is a good decision maker, and was one of the discussion questions, and she said my sister, and then she mentioned that her sister was 34 and she was only 14, which is possible, but, you know, I have a lot of kids from non-intact families, and I didn't know if that was, you know, but anyway, so I wasn't really concerned about it, but she seemed a little tense, and I have a get to know you form, and on her get to know you form, what name do you want to be called by? And usually what I mean is a nickname or a middle name, but she used a totally different name, which is a name I've never heard. And I'm kind of alerted to, I don't want to make a big deal out of it because I don't know that this is anything except that she wants to be called by a different name. But she also wrote on her form that she wished Catholics would just be nice to everybody. I don't want to break her trust by asking the parents, you know, whether I can call her by this name. Cause I'd like to get to know this young lady. And if she does have questions, I want to know about that. So I was wondering,
Have you asked her directly, you know, is this your name? And she may say, no, it's the name that I like to be called. Have you had a chance to just ask her directly?
And I haven't called her or anything, no.
Okay. Well, maybe the best thing to do is kind of like don't burn that bridge till you get to it. Maybe just wait and see when you do see her and you can ask her. That's an interesting name. Is that the name that you were baptized with? I mean, you know that it's not. And then maybe she'll tell a little bit about what that is. And that could give you some clues to find out if there's something else that maybe is troubling her or some other issue. Could be just a nickname. Nothing wrong with nicknames. But there may be nothing to it, or maybe there is something to it. But if you approach it in a gentle, roundabout way, she may open up to you. And that would be the easiest way for you to figure out if there's anything more that you could do or more that you could encourage her to do, depending upon what her situation is. You know what I mean?
That's a good deal. Just talk to her in a gentle way about it. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Be
that's
loving.
Good advice. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome. Thank you. Well, that's what I find often is that if we do a full frontal assault on somebody's position, it usually winds up with the person getting defensive and things can get out of control. So I'm a big believer in being more roundabout, more to be more, I don't know the right word for it really, but just to maybe approach things in a way that is not confrontational. That's probably the best way I can put it. I hope that it helps you. Let's go now to Kathleen in California. Good morning, Kathleen. Oh, okay. All right, Joan in Michigan it is. Welcome, Joan.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm great, thanks. I just started listening to your show probably a couple weeks ago, and I love it. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Welcome aboard. Good to have you.
Oh, thanks. So my question is, I'm from a large family, and only two of us actually continue to practice a faith. And So I've been witnessing and just kind of, just being more expressive of the faith in little ways. And it's brought about an opening with one of my family members to talk about going back to Mass. Knowledge of the faith, we were all raised, stopped at eighth grade. So I kind of know where she's at. I know that it was all about rules because we're in an older generation here. So what I want to do is I don't want to take pause to the relationship that I've built and the positivity of the joys of the Mass. But what I am concerned about is her soul, because I know that she would go back to Mass and communion not knowing that she needs to do a full confession. So I'm looking for anyone who's got literature or a paper or a talk that just kind of walks it back lovingly, because that's not how we were raised on what the faith was. It was always about rules, and that's literally not how our whole home life was, too. So I think that would, freak her out, and just she wouldn't go back.
Right. Understandable. Well, some things come to mind. I don't know with certitude that Father Mike Schmitz has done a talk on this, but I have a feeling he probably has. And he has a very expansive YouTube channel. Just look up Father Mike Schmitz, and you'll find his YouTube videos there. They're all typically brief, maybe 5-6 minutes at the most. And if you scroll through, you could even do a word search like Eucharist or Mass or something like that. And chances are you'll find at least one video that he's done, and that might be something you could send her. Maybe send her on 2 or 3 different topics and include that one so that she'll watch it. And that way it will be less pointed. In other words, if you send her just a video on that one topic, it might feel to her like you're trying to tell her without telling her, which is what you're doing, quite frankly. But if you were to send a couple different topics on other issues and then include this one, chances are she'll watch all of them. And then you it's kind of like, with a little child who's got a fever, you put the baby aspirin in a spoonful of jelly. He doesn't taste the aspirin. He tastes the jelly. That tastes great. But he gets the aspirin in the meantime. So maybe try something like that. That would be one thing to do. Catholic Answers, I think they have, if not a tract on that topic, they do have some resources on this issue of receiving Holy Communion and when you shouldn't. And their website is catholic.com. I think that would be another easy thing to find over there. So maybe, do you think she would watch a video if you were to text her a clip to one or more YouTube videos?
I do, because I think that's actually, I found an ad that came up on Facebook that really actually showed the Eucharist, and it was a very visual ad showing angels and saints, and at the altar it showed the priest turning into Jesus, and it was very, very visual, and I sent her that.
I've seen it.
And the reason being was also that, the Mass is where she could pray for her her husband who passed away. And just kind of, I use that moment to just kind of grab that concept. And so very visual, very short. I think that's the key because I don't think they, you know, lecturing and all that kind of stuff doesn't work. And so I just, I just feel very, very rewarded for my patients in wanting to, you know, just work to help my family get to know, to come back to the church properly.
Yeah. They're lucky to have you as a, sister, a daughter. They're lucky to have you because you're looking out for them. And it's a beautiful thing. I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. It's edifying for people listening to you right now.
Oh, thanks. Well, a lot of people have brought me to where I'm at, and you guys are actually part of it because, like, as the rest of my family wasn't really catechized well, I wasn't either. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you Catholic Radio did it. I mean,
awesome.
Completely. I mean, I actually know the faith now, and I know the love from the faith and not the condemnation and that whole other feeling that comes from the rules and stuff. So thank you very much for your ministry because it's changing us.
Well, thank you. That's kind of you to say so. And we're all in this together. We're all helping each other. And it's good to know that what you've heard so far on Relevant Radio has been helpful to you. So help us spread the word. And who knows, maybe if you get your sister to listen to this program, maybe something similar will happen with her. We hear that all the time, actually. We hear from people every day, I'd say, without exaggeration, we hear every day from people who say that listening to Relevant Radio brought me back to the practice of the faith. It brought me back to the sacraments. I'm praying again. I've been to confession for the first time in many years. We hear that very frequently. So thank you for adding your solidarity to all those people who have said that. We sure appreciate it.
Thank you. Well, and to add to your Father Rocky Rosary, I found that this whole year during COVID, and I just emailed that out to my old homeschool group for everybody to join in. And so the word's getting out, and I hope that there's just more people praying with you guys, and thank you again for all that you do.
Thank you. It's so nice to talk to you, Joan. I really appreciate it. And I'll say a little prayer that your sister comes around easily, so there's more reason to rejoice in your family. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Twyla in Clear Lake, Minnesota. Hi, Twyla.
Hi, Patrick. I'm happy to talk to you. I have a question. Are all saints, what is the relationship between saints and the Catholic Church? Do saints become declared saints through the Catholic Church only?
Okay. Well, let's take one step back and posit that everybody who goes to heaven is a saint by definition because they are made perfect in righteousness. They see God face to face. They're maxed out in terms of holiness. And so they are truly saints. Now, there are some people who are declared saints by the church. That's what we call canonization. And that doesn't change their status in heaven. It's not as though if you were in heaven as a saint and then the Catholic Church canonized you that you'd move up to a higher level. Now, it doesn't affect their glory at all. Rather, it's for us. So in the Catholic Church, when a saint is canonized, it's the church's way of saying this person we know for sure is in heaven. There have been miracles that are inexplicable according to modern science. We've studied thoroughly the life of this person, and we know with certitude this person is in heaven and is worthy of our respect and veneration. And we can ask this person to pray for us because we have that certitude that he or she is in heaven. So the canonization of saints is for us. It helps us. It doesn't change anything for the saint in heaven. But by virtue of being in heaven, everybody who is there is a saint, whether or not they've been canonized. Does that make sense?
Yes, but I was wondering, Lutheran churches are named like St. Andrew, and how is that? You know, that's a Catholic thing.
Right, it's a Catholic thing. So the Eastern Orthodox churches, they do have a similar process where they will declare certain people to be saints. In the case of Lutherans or Episcopalians and other more high church Protestant groups, they're just using the term saint in a kind of a colloquial way. We all know about St. John the Baptist. We know about St. Augustine. We know about some of these early saints, St. Francis of Assisi. And so they're using the term saint by way of recognizing that person as a saint, but they're not really editorializing on the Catholic Church or the process of canonization. It's just a custom. They're using it in a customary way as opposed to trying to make some theological point. Do you see what I mean?
That's a good answer. Yeah, I do. I see that. Well, thank you so much. Yeah. I always wondered that.
You are welcome. Yeah, well, thank you for asking. I'm sure other people who are listening right now may have had the same questions, so we appreciate that very much. Thank you. Let's go to David now in Denver. Hello, David.
Hi, Patrick. I have a bunch of questions. So
hit me with your
you
best shot.
Okay. All right. So the one, I guess the most important one is catechizing my kids.
Are you on a speakerphone, David? Forgive my interruption, because it sounds like you're on a speakerphone.
I'm so sorry.
You got to be off speakerphone.
No, okay. Is that better?
That's better.
Is that better? Okay, yeah, yes. It was one of those headset things. So, catechizing our kids, especially battling with the culture, and so I started reading that book by Peter Kreft with about apologetics. You recommended it to somebody.
Yeah, Handbook of Catholic Apologetics.
Yes, and so one of the chapters talks about the religion of the United States being equality. You know, God is an equal opportunity employer, and I see, like my oldest, who's in high school, just saying, "Yeah, I don't see." So there's a lot of things, there's a lot of factors that go into her position, and I beat myself up for my lack of conversion and the example of my wife and I not having unity, and I beat myself up thinking it's like just having these recurring thoughts that it's because of me. It's because of me. And
I'm getting, forgive me. I'm getting lost now. I really no longer know what you're asking me. Could you summarize this into maybe a question or something? All right. I don't know if you're still there.
He just dropped. Yeah. I don't know what happened.
Oh,
he's gone.
That's a bummer. All right. Well, if you can call back 888-914-9149, maybe the phone was giving him trouble. I don't know. Sorry about that. Let's go now to Sarah in Albuquerque. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. You're welcome.
I have a question about the church teaching on circumcision. I was always under the impression that the church allows circumcision, but then a friend told me about the Council of Florence, and that in the Council of Florence, it was... I guess not allowed. And sure enough, when my husband and I looked it up, it sounds like if you're circumcised or if you circumcise your children, you're condemned. And so I'm just wondering about that.
Mm-hmm, sure. Well, there is a religious issue here, and then there's a kind of cultural issue and maybe even a quasi-medical issue. So from a religious standpoint, with regard to Judaism, the Catholic Church said very clearly, and this going back to the New Testament, that circumcision is not only not necessary, but you should not perform circumcision if there's some religious reason that you're doing so, because it's no longer necessary. Baptism replaced circumcision, and it was one of the ordinances of the Old Covenant, and that passed away, along with many other things like keeping kosher and animal sacrifice and a variety of other things that were instituted, and they were obligatory for a time. But when Jesus ministered and then died and rose from the dead, then all those things passed away, and circumcision is one of them. Now, the Council of Florence was referring to that in a twofold way. One was to the extent that any Christian was under the impression or misimpression, as the case may be, that circumcision was in some way a necessary religious rite. That was one reason for forbidding it. The other reason for forbidding it, at least for a time anyway, was because it was a way to further, maybe the right word would be repudiate the mindset that the Jews of old had, that their religion was still the right religion or the main religion. It was a way of emphasizing that those things are now passed away in Christ. They're abolished in Jesus, and they've been replaced by the new covenant. So my reading of that council is that that was also part of the reason why this was forbidden. Now, in modern times, or more recent times at least, circumcision is not prohibited if there's a, you know, say a medical reason for it, or maybe there's just a family custom, perhaps. The church would say, as long as this is not being done for a religious purpose. I haven't followed that particular issue very closely, but from what I do know in speaking with physicians and such, it's an unnecessary procedure, meaning that given modern standards of cleanliness and running water and soap and things that we have available to us that maybe in times gone by that they didn't have available, that there's no longer a medical reason for it. So it's a kind of superfluous, unnecessary procedure that, at least from a medical standpoint, you could just simply not bother with it and there'd be no problem as far as health is concerned. So those are a few thoughts. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that makes sense. So it sounds like the church allows it now, as long as it's not being done for a religious reason or because you think it's necessary for salvation or something like that.
Right, right. Now, let me throw you a curveball. In the case of St. Paul and St. Peter, that we have a fascinating instance that St. Paul actually discusses in the book of Galatians, where he talks about how he withstood St. Peter to his face because St. Peter was acting in a hypocritical way when there were those who were Judaizers, so they were Jewish Christians, but they maintained this view that you had to be circumcised and you had to live according to the Jewish laws in order to be Christian. And St. Peter knew that this was no longer the case because God had revealed that to him. So what happened was St. Paul, he, as we're told, withstood St. Peter to his face, and he even says in the epistle to the Galatians, he says, you know, if you are being circumcised, then Christ is of no avail to you. So you can read this epistle to the Galatians and get a very specific commentary on this issue. So he says, if you're having yourself circumcised, then Christ is of no avail to you. But then what happens is that when St. Paul and Timothy were having, you know, they were traveling in different places, and St. Paul actually, for fear of the Jews, he had St. Timothy circumcised. And that actually is an example of where he seems to have been a bit hypocritical himself, because he condemned Peter for eating, having table fellowship with the Judaizers, and yet he himself, when it came time to travel with St. Timothy so that it wouldn't cause a controversy, he had St. Timothy circumcised. So that it kind of clouds the issue as far as St. Paul's rebuke of St. Peter is concerned. But you'll find all of that in the Epistle to the Galatians if you're interested. I hope that helps. And I've got to press on, so I will do that now. Thank you for the phone call. We have about an hour and a half left in the program today. Plenty of time yet for you to call 888-914-9149. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Cyrus, you know how we love to play that William Shatner version of Rocket Man, where he's smoking a cigarette kind of speaking the song? Is that really singing?
Rocket Man.
I'm going to be high. as a kite.
By then.
Yeah, I can't get enough of that. And the thing that I just love about it is that he was totally serious. He's not vamping. He's not spoofing.
I don't know.
He is serious.
Yeah.
Look at it again. But anyway, so in light of all that, I just wanted to let you know that he actually is going to be a Rocket Man, and all the Rocket Man jokes are starting up because he is going to be on the Amazon founder Jeff Bezos' new Shepard rocket. This according to TMZ. Let me read to you how it's being reported in the New York Post. William Shatner is going from starring in Star Trek to seeing real stars. The science fiction actor who's 90 is going to space aboard Amazon founder Jeff Bezos' new Shepard. Bezos' Galaxy Rider is made by his space travel company Blue Origin. When Nancy and I were down on the Space Coast when we were in Florida earlier this year, we took a day and we went to Mission Control and where they launched the Saturn V rockets. Is awesome. I recommend anybody, if you want to get to know more about the space program from days gone by, go there. And Blue Origin's got its big, you know, complex there as well. Shatner will be the oldest person ever to travel into outer space. He's Canadian, and he will be in space for 15 minutes. It's going to take place next month. The mission is going to be filmed for an upcoming documentary featuring the actor who played Captain James T. Kirk. Bezos is 57. He went into space in July alongside his brother, Mark Bezos. Wally Funk, F-U-N-K, he was the pilot. He, heretofore at least, will be the oldest person in space until William Shatner gets there. They went 66.5 miles above the Earth. They spent 10 minutes off the ground. And the next one that goes up is going to be carrying Captain Kirk himself into space.
That's cool. Huh? Well, I hope he's packing his bags.
Yeah.
Pack my bag. Last night, pre-flight.
Pre-flight.
0 hour.
9
a.m.
It's cold. It's cold.
He's taking a drag. He's going to be high.
High.
As a kite. Oh, he's a kite by then.
Oh, he sure takes his time.
You know what I want? You know what I want? I want him to do that in space. I want him to be on the Blue Origin rocket in space and do this from up there. Would that not be an historical moment?
I would tune in for that.
I would do pay-per-view for that.
I would too. It's cool.
Okay, so when that happens, we're going to report on it and post that for people who want to see what we're talking about. If you've never seen it, it's surreal.
I'll get that.
You have to
right
see
now.
It. And he really is serious, Cyrus. I mean it. He is.
I can't give you Warp right. 9 much longer, Mr. Spock. These engines are beginning to show signs of stress.
Stress. I don't want our callers to get stressed. Let's go to... Where are we going to go, Cyrus? Are we going... Who are
let's,
we going
let's
to?
Let's check
Who
in with Anthony in Las Vegas.
Very well. Hello, Anthony. Welcome.
Hi, Patrick. I appreciate you for taking the call.
Sure.
I heard you guys talking about the rosary, and I just wanted to state that, honestly, I've been dedicating a mystery for every single person that needs it, and I've been praying the rosary literally every day. Now it's been for like a month straight. And
that's
just
good.
Because I see how much power it got. And not only that, but the other day I did call here because I pretty much needed a miracle to be performed. And I already know that God is always the one that has the last words, and he's the only one that could do miracles. And he ended up taking care of the situation that I needed him to take care of, which was a liver transplant for someone. And not only that, but before... When I was doing the rosary, he actually took care of two people that were in the hospital that were suffering from COVID. And he got them out of that situation, and they were up and recovering and living their life again. And I just noticed that.
That's wonderful.
Much, yeah, and I just noticed that pretty much the rosary has so much power that nobody really knows it, that it performs miracles. And on the side, this is not only God, this is also Virgin Mary. Like, people don't realize how powerful it is, to reach out to Virgin Mary also.
And I agree. Our Lady is a very powerful intercessor. I want to share with you something, and I appreciate your phone call very much. Thank you. Listen to this. You're going to love this. These are the 15 promises that are made to those who pray the rosary regularly. And this is something issued by the Dominican friars. They have been in existence for over 800 years. So here's what they say. They say that many benefits of what Pope St. John Paul II called an exquisitely contemplative prayer were enumerated in a special way by a 15th century Dominican friar. According to the tradition, Alanus de Rupe received the following 15 promises from the Lord for those who pray the rosary devoutly. And apparently it was not the Lord, it was the Blessed Virgin Mary herself who told him this in a private revelation. So here they are, and this has been venerated by the Dominicans, not to mention the church as a whole, ever since, so going back 500 years now. So these are the 15 promises that are made by Our Lady if you pray the rosary faithfully. Number one, those who faithfully serve me with the recitation of the rosary shall receive signal graces. I promise my special protection and the greatest graces to all those who shall recite the rosary. The rosary shall be a powerful armor against hell. It will destroy vice, decrease sin, and defeat heresies. The recitation of the rosary will cause virtue and good works to flourish. It will obtain for souls the abundant mercy of God. It will withdraw hearts of men from the love of the world and its vanities, and will lift them to the desire of eternal things. Souls which commend themselves to Our Lady by recitation of the rosary shall not perish, and that's referring to going to hell. Those who recite the rosary devoutly, applying themselves to the consideration of its sacred mysteries, shall never be conquered by misfortune. And she's referring here to the eternal kind of misfortune or spiritual misfortune. In his justice, God will not chastise them, nor shall they perish by an unprovided death. Sinners, and that's referring to dying, where you have an opportunity to be right with God before you die. The just shall persevere in grace and become worthy of eternal life. Those who have a true devotion to the rosary shall not die without the sacraments of the church. Those who faithfully recite the rosary shall have during their life and at their death the light of God and the plenitude of his graces. At the moment of death, they shall participate in the merits of the saints in paradise. Our Lady promises to pray in a special way for the delivery from purgatory for those who may be in purgatory if they've been devoted to the rosary. The faithful children of the rosary shall merit a high degree of glory in heaven. By the recitation of the rosary, you shall obtain all that you ask from Our Lady when you ask for her intercession. Those who propagate the Holy Rosary shall be aided by me in their necessities. She says she has obtained from her divine Son, Jesus, that all those who pray and advocate for the rosary shall have for their intercessors the entire celestial court during their life and at the hour of their death. All who recite the rosary are my beloved children and brothers and sisters of Jesus. And then lastly, I've always really liked this one, devotion to the rosary is a great sign of predestination. And keep in mind that predestination is taught in the Bible, and the church teaches predestination. Certainly it doesn't teach double predestination, as some think the Bible teaches. In other words, it doesn't teach that God predestines certain people to hell no matter what. But in any case, if you are praying the rosary regularly, these benefits accrue to you, not to mention the fact that it will turn your life around. It'll make you a better person. If you make a commitment to praying the rosary every day, I can guarantee you that if you are in some sinful situation, that's going to wither and dry up and go away, the way weeds do when you apply Roundup to them. So this is like spiritual Roundup that you're spraying on the weeds of sin in the garden of your soul. And you can ask for miracles, maybe in your family, marriage situations, health situations. It's a long and storied history of miracles that have taken place as a result. Father Rocky mentioned briefly, we were sort of in passing, he mentioned Lepanto in the 16th century, and Pope St. Pius V. What had happened there was the Turkish fleet was poised to reinvade Europe, and they had been kicked out some decades earlier in Spain by King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella when they conquered Granada, in the south. and they wanted to come back, and they were planning to come back, and they were going to launch an invasion that would begin in Italy. And so the Pope, knowing this was going to happen and knowing that the Catholic forces that from the various kingdoms and the Holy Roman Empire and all those that gathered together to defend Christendom against the attack of the Muslims, the Pope knew, and as they all did, that they were seriously outnumbered. So the Pope asked for all the Catholics who could get the message to pray the rosary fervently for the miracle of defeating these invaders and preventing them from sweeping into Europe. And lo and behold, this amazing upset in this battle took place, and the Muslim navies were defeated soundly, decisively, and they never came back. And that's always been attributable to praying the rosary. So as our caller a few minutes ago was saying, praying the rosary is very powerful, and we've seen it work in amazing ways throughout history. So if you could, if you're looking for a little bit of Holy Ghost power coming into your marriage or your life or the lives of people you care about, start praying the rosary. You're going to see great things. I guarantee you that. All right. Quick timeout. We'll come back with more. Was that a Wookiee I just heard? Why did I hear a Wookiee?
You aren't supposed to hear that.
I heard a Wookiee.
Yeah, my bad. Sorry. I'm rusty.
So is he wandering the hallways of...
He was looking for Kirk.
Was he now?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was looking for a nice...
You're mixing the universes.
I am mixing the universes. I was looking for a nice Kirk sound effect, and I accidentally hit Chewie. Sorry.
Yeah, you accidentally played it where I could hear it. So
that's really the problem.
That's the funniest part of all of it right there. You were trying to get away with something. All right. Well,
thank you,
Cyrus. Yep. I appreciate it. You can't do the Wookiee now. You have to do something else. We'll be back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show and your phone calls right after this.
Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com.
All right, we are back. And Cyrus, we were talking about Star Wars briefly a moment ago. Well, you did that Wookiee sound.
Yeah, thanks for
reminding me.
Let me
hear that Wookiee sound. Yeah, let me hear that again.
I'm busy. I don't just have
you're
Chewbacca.
You're busy doing what I want you to do. That's what you're busy doing.
I just have Chewbacca standing here.
Yes, you do. You played it a minute ago.
He left. He only has, how much time do you think Chewbacca has to sit here?
He's a busy guy. Yeah, that's the one.
That's the one.
Okay, so that's going to set the stage for this story. I don't know if you are aware of this, but according to Scientific American, the publication, Jedis, are you ready for this, are toxic masculinity, and they're problematic too because they're white saviors. So Star Wars is now white supremacist.
That's not true.
Because
that's not
they're
true.
Here to tell you.
That's impossible.
Scientific American says it. Listen to this. So Scientific American, this, is, by the way, is being reported by the Daily Wire, published in 1845. They've published Albert Einstein, Linus Pauling, Robert Oppenheimer, and many other renowned scientists. These days, however, the magazine is concerning itself with somewhat different topics, like how problematic the fictional space warriors known as Jedis are. In a story, is this Lord of the Rings? No, this is not Lord of the Rings.
No.
This is Star Wars. Yeah. I recognize this.
As you should. It's the great
focus your mind on this, Cyrus. Focus your mind
just
on this.
Just giving you some mood music.
Yeah. The music is overpowering me right now.
It is that good. It's true.
Yeah. It is good. But check out this story, though. I don't want you to lose track of the story. So in a story that was published last Thursday titled, Why the Term Jedi is Problematic for Describing Programs That Promote Justice, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion, a group of five authors argue the Jedi, and you see what they did with the acronym, J-E-D-I, so groups that promote justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion. A group of five authors argue that the Jedi are inappropriate mascots for social justice. They say that the scientific world should jettison the Jedi, including naming anything after them or displaying any Star Wars memorabilia in common workplaces, because the Space Knights are emblems, this is a quote from the article, emblems for a host of dangerously reactionary values and assumptions. I'll bet you didn't know any of this, Cyrus, did you? The Jedi are a religious order of intergalactic police monks prone to white saviorism and toxically masculine approaches to conflict resolution, violent duels with phallic saber lightsabers, gaslighting by means of Jedi mind tricks, etc. Yeah.
The sound of, what are they calling this? Toxic masculinity.
Toxic masculinity. It's your approach to conflict resolution that's the problem. By the way, play that again, and I want to press pause on the Jedi thing. Play that again, and I'll tell you what that also sounds like. Go ahead, play. That's the sound of prehistoric mosquitoes that were the size of hummingbirds. Could you imagine having a backyard barbecue in the Pleistocene era and mosquitoes swarming around you the size of hummingbirds and that sound in your ears? Cyrus?
Things under control, situation normal. We're fine. We're all fine here now. Thank you.
Yeah.
How are you?
All right. Yeah. Star Wars arguably conflates alienness with non-whiteness, often seeming to rely on racist stereotypes when depicting non-human species. The franchise's cultural footprint can be tracked in the saga of United States military-industrial investment and expansion, from debates around Reagan's Star Wars strategic defense initiative to the planned joint enterprise defense infrastructure. Those unfamiliar or uncomfortable with Star Wars, including those hurt by the message it sends, may feel alienated. I love all the double entendres in this article here. They may feel alienated by the parade of jokes, puns, and references surrounding the term Jedi. The article concludes by saying readers who might react defensively, and your name is in this article, Cyrus, such as Cyrus Simcoe. The article concludes by saying readers like Cyrus Simcoe who might react defensively should ask themselves why they're Cyrus, I'm going to ask you this question. Why are you prioritizing the cultural dreamscape of the Jedi over the real-world project of social justice? Do you ever ask yourself that question? No. How eager are you to fight Star Wars battles when that time and energy could be better spent fighting for social justice?
Okay, so we can't have anything then. So there's no everyone that's a this big Marvel movie fan or Lord of the Rings or C.S. Lewis. Anybody that likes anything that's not fighting social justice, then they're wasting their time.
Well, here's the asterisk next to that. Okay. I understand what you're saying.
I'm getting fired up.
If they decide it's racist, then it's racist. But if they decide it's not racist, or if they just don't get around to it, then you're safe. But when they train their beady-eyed gaze on whatever, in this case it's the Jedi's, then you have to cease and desist. So you have to wait and take your marching orders from them before you'll really know one way or the other whether something is actually white supremacist and racist. Do you see how this works?
I'm so confused.
Yeah.
I don't.
You are the chosen one!
Huh?
It was said that you would destroy this and not join them!
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I love that. My grandsons and I roared with laughter over that video that you just played all summer long. They were visiting, and we just laughed. In fact, it got to the point where I could carry on a conversation with my grandson Patrick, who showed me this, and we would just talk like that, and I would ask him questions, or it was just absolutely hysterical.
Uh-huh.
But this is self-indulgent now. I feel as though we probably should do some stuff on the show.
It's totally ridiculous. Star Wars is good. Can't tell me any
different. The white male savior issue doesn't bother you, that these guys are saving people and they happen to be white.
Wasn't nothing to do with anything.
Who is the guy who does the what's in your wallet? Wasn't that guy in Star Wars? Wasn't he a Jedi Knight? You know,
Mace Windu. Yeah, Mace Windu was a Jedi.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a Jedi Master.
That's not his real name, though.
Oh, Cyrus. We can't say Jedi Master anymore because of the word Master.
Why?
Remember, we we talked about that.
Oh,
what,
yeah.
A year or two ago?
I forgot about that. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah. So this is, can't have all anything right. Nice anymore.
Well, now you know why. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Chicago and talk to Marcia. Good morning, Marcia.
Good morning. My question is, when I'm with people and we, in Chicago, this is often, we pass by somebody who's jingling their cup or homeless or, and I hear the expression, there but for the grace of God go I. Now, that to me implies I have God's grace and they don't. Doesn't everybody have God's grace?
Yeah, everyone is given sufficient grace, but I don't think that's what it means. Colloquially, what that means is that you too could fall into sin. You too could fall into poverty. You too, I mean, any one of us could experience some of these things that are you know, painful or difficult. So it's just a way of saying, not that the other person doesn't have grace, but in God's providence, for the time being at least, that you are being kept from some of these difficulties. Some people carry crosses that you don't have to carry, kind of thing. So it's meant in that sense, but it's not a theological statement that is saying that that person doesn't have grace. You see what I mean?
Okay. I do, but that always bothers me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's say that you saw, let's say somebody falls into sexual sin, let's say. And that's because they weren't careful and they stopped praying maybe, or whatever the factors were that led up to it. And if you said, there but for the grace of God go I, what you're saying is that you too could fall into sin, but you know, you haven't made the same mistakes that the other person made. So it's kind of a reminder to yourself of your own fragility or your own dependence upon God's providence, rather than saying that that other person doesn't have grace. I hope that clears it up for you. I appreciate that. 888-914-9149. I'm looking at the screen, Cyrus, and I'm not sure if we still have Patrick in Trenton. Is Patrick still with us? I can't tell for sure.
Yep, I'm right here.
Okay, great. Patrick in Trenton, welcome to the program, sir.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to thank you personally. This was years ago. I called you, and I was having a lot of troubles. I was being tormented by the devil, literally. I was having plugs unplugged in my house. Bulbs were going out.
Oh, wow.
And I was struggling with vice for years that I was having trouble getting over. Mm-hmm. And you told me straight up, start doing daily rosary. And it was like, and I've gotten so far to, in my spiritual
life
by listening to you.
Wonderful. That makes me so happy. So let me make sure I have it straight. So you were dealing with all these crazy things. You had some kind of habitual sin in your life, and by praying the rosary, finish the sentence. So when you started praying the rosary, ... what happened?
Well, slowly I just started becoming more like devout and more serious about my faith, and I was able to focus more on where I wanted to get, and I wasn't so distracted. It took a little while.
Yeah.
To get where I wanted to get. It took a long while. But I just kind of stuck with it. And, I didn't give up. Started doing a lot of adoration. And
excellent.
Going to adoration and doing the rosary.
That's excellent.
I still have ways to go. I'm not, perfect by no means. But, I definitely have.
But you're making progress. You're making progress. You're moving in the right direction.
Yes. So,
I am delighted for you.
And I could actually even go as far now, and I have a couple friends that I do the Divine Mercy with now, and that took a long while to actually go and pray with people of friends that I have.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so good. So you're seeing the effects, the spiritual fruits and benefits in your own life from praying the rosary. I assume you're praying the rosary every day, right?
I'm praying it every day. Even if I get really busy, I'll do it before I fall asleep. Even if I fall asleep doing it, it's still I get benefits from it.
Yeah. Hey, let me give you a tip. I learned this tip a long time ago. I usually get my rosary prayed early in the day, but sometimes, you know, if you're busy or traveling or something, it doesn't always work out that way. So one tip that I've used, in one technique rather, that I've used is, so if I'm in bed, I'm going to fall asleep pretty quickly. But if I still have to pray the rosary, I'll either make sure that I'm not in bed, I'm kneeling down, for example, or sitting in a chair. But if for some reason you're in bed and you know you're going to fall asleep, try this. If you're lying on your back, raise one of your arms straight up as if you're pointing your fingers at the ceiling. And just keep it straight up. And as you're praying the rosary, if you start to fall asleep, your arm will fall and it'll wake you up. And it works. And then you can get your rosary said, and then you can fall asleep and sleep the sleep of the just. Thank you. That makes me happy to hear your victory. I'll be right back with hour three of the program right after this. Who knows what Star Wars sound effects Cyrus is cooking up in the meantime. We'll see about that. I'll be right back. So please stay right there. I'm coming right back.
Do or do not. There is no try.